This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And it's not a great week to work in U.S. Homeland Security, or for the federal government for that matter. As Congress stops the NSA from collecting bulk data, apparently Chinese hackers have been collecting their own bulk data on federal workers, 4 million of them. That's the suspicion from officials close to an FBI investigation, officials widely cited in media reports. The China hack is troubling for a number of reasons, and we'll talk about those. In a week when the head of the TSA, responsible for airline security, was replaced due to security failures at U.S. airports, some little thing about smuggled firearms getting through security. But this is also the week of the Freedom Act, where the U.S. does an about-face on bulk metadata collection, something, by the way, the NSA claims it's tired of collecting, can do without, and hates paying for. So where do we stand on national security? Friday, June 5th, 2015, joining us is Richard Clark, served in the Clinton, George W. Bush, and Obama administrations as an advisor on cybersecurity and counterterrorism. Richard Clark, welcome.
Good to be with you, John.
I don't know how reassuring your novel is, but good luck with that. Let's talk about the China security breach, the alleged China security breach for a moment. How troubling is this, do you think?
Well, I think if you take it in context of all of the other major security breaches of databases that the Chinese have done, the Chinese now know everyone's social security number, date and place of birth, all the information that you are asked when you try to reset your password, when you try to access your bank account. The Chinese know all of that now, and there's a big implication. And that is, institutions can no longer use that sort of identifier to figure out who you are and to grant you access, because your social security number and your date of birth are public information for all practical purposes.
Would you say that this constitutes a failure of the Einstein system that NSA and Homeland Security had set up to detect this kind of intrusion? It apparently didn't detect it for quite a while.
Well, it constituted a failure of all of their security systems. If I were in the White House today, I would say to the president, your personal emails have been hacked. The State Departments, the Defense Departments, the Interior Departments, every federal employee and retiree. You know, Mr. President, maybe you should do something different. Maybe you should think that what you're doing now isn't working.
What would you suggest as a different kind of strategy?
Well, for one thing, John, he needs to put somebody in charge. You know, if I ask you who is in charge of maintaining cybersecurity for the U.S. government, do you know the answer to that?
No.
No one else does either, because no one's in charge. And what we need to do is put someone in charge, give that person all the authority necessary, all the budget necessary, and let them secure the networks. It's doable, but they have to have a lot of power.
Would you say this Chinese intrusion is some preparatory tactic that is going to lead to something much more damaging and have a greater impact on lives? Is it a test kind of thing? Or, as you say, is it just collecting data on U.S. individuals to be used opportunistically in the future?
I think it's the latter. It's so easy to do for the Chinese. Our security is so bad. It's not like they're spending billions of dollars on some major program to collect this information. They do it routinely because it's easily done. And they are probably collecting this sort of information. So in some future case, so they might be able to go to a Lockheed or some other defense manufacturer and reset somebody's password using social engineering, saying, here's my date of birth, here's my social security number, please reset my password. And then they're in the network.
So take a snapshot of June 5th, 2015. How would you describe U.S. security cooperation on information right now compared to the moments before 9/11 so many years ago?
Well, it's much better, but you know, the offense has gotten better faster. So even as the defensive measures have been increased and improved, the situation overall, net-net, has gotten worse. It's much more costly to defend than it is to attack in cyberspace. And therefore, the people who are trying to hack into our networks, and there are many, are succeeding.
And so is it the case that the NSA's investment in proactive, aggressive surveillance technology is just cheaper than doing defense. It's not as though they're really interested so much in security. It's just they've chosen the easy job first. We're not defended, and that's just going to have to wait.
No, I don't think that's accurate. I think the NSA program that was publicly revealed by the New York Times yesterday, if it's true, and I frankly don't know if it's true, is part of what you need to do to defend the networks. We just need to have some assurance that any data swept up in the process about individual Americans is eliminated.
And do you think you've been hacked?
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
So that's not a reason why you don't ever use Skype when we call you up? It's not that you're worried about the NSA or anything like that?
I'm sure I've been hacked by all sorts of governments and criminal organizations, John, and so have you.
All right, yes, and we have that in common. And good luck with the Pinnacle event this summer.
Thanks very much.
Richard Clark served in the Clinton, George W. Bush, and Obama administrations as an advisor on cybersecurity and counterterrorism. He's also the author of the new novel Pinnacle Event, a reassuring tale about murders during the 2016 presidential campaign, the theft of nuclear weapons, and a terror plot to make the devastation of Hiroshima seem like a fire drill.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.